This week on Vaticano, learn about the plight of Christians in the Holy Land amidst the Israel-Hamas war. Examine the role of music in evangelization by enjoying a Hillbilly Thomas concert. And return to the Vatican Museums for part three of our series. Vaticano starts now.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, buona domenica. Oggi non posso affacciarmi dalla finestra perché ho questo problema di infiammazione ai polmoni.
On Sunday, November the 26th, Pope Francis surprised the world by giving the Angelus blessing from his residence, the Santa Marta Guest House, rather than from the usual window of the Apostolic Palace overlooking St. Peter's Square. Pope Francis was being treated with antibiotics due to a lung inflammation. He was in good and stable condition without a fever, and his condition was improving. A CT scan at a Rome hospital over the weekend ruled out pneumonia. Pope Francis felt well enough to keep his scheduled appointment with the president of Paraguay on Monday morning, but postponed some of his other meetings during the week as he recovers from what the Vatican has described as a mild flu. Pope Francis, who turns 87 years old next month, has experienced several medical setbacks in recent years. The Pope had also been scheduled to travel to Dubai this weekend to deliver a speech at the COP28 climate conference. The Holy Father would have visited the United Arab Emirates December the 1st through the 3rd for the conference, marking the first time a pontiff had attended the event. The Holy See Press Office announced that while Pope Francis's condition is improving, the Holy Father's doctors asked the Pope not to make the trip, and that Pope Francis accepted the doctor's request with great regret. Pope Francis has made protection of the environment one of the hallmarks of his papacy, and met last month with COP28 President Sultan Al-Jaber. Church teaching on homosexual acts and women priests are not up for discussion. Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican's Secretary of State, has informed the German bishops that the ordination of women and changes in the Church's teaching on homosexuality cannot be subjects of discussion in the upcoming meetings with delegates of the German Synodal Way in Rome. The letter also reminded the bishops of potential disciplinary consequences for anyone defying the teaching of the Church. Written by Cardinal Pietro Parolin and addressed to the Secretary General of the German Bishops' Conference, Beate Giles, the letter was shared with all German diocesan bishops, the latest in a growing list of Vatican interventions regarding the German Synodal Way. German bishops and representatives of the Roman Curia met in the Vatican in July for discussions. These talks will continue in 2024. They're expected to cover ecclesiology, anthropology, morality and liturgy, and texts of the Synodal Way.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vatican Updates, the most important news from Pope Francis and the Vatican. The office of the President-elect of Argentina confirmed that the country's new president, Javier Milei, received a rosary from Pope Francis. The sacramental, blessed by the Holy Father, was sent to Milei and Vice President-elect Victoria Villarruel. Pope Francis's gift follows a phone call he had last week with the President-elect of Argentina, in which the pontiff congratulated Milei and advised him to have courage and wisdom in governing the nation. Pope Francis met this morning with the President of Paraguay, Santiago Peña Palacios. The encounter lasted about 25 minutes and was held at the Pope's residence in Casa Santa Marta, and not as usual, in the Apostolic Palace, since the Pope is suffering from a mild pulmonary inflammation. Bishop Robert Barron has said that he is in frank disagreement with the final report of the Synod on Synodality's claim that advances in the sciences require an evolution in the Church's moral teaching on human sexuality. The Bishop of Winona, Rochester, Minnesota, said it is troubling to see how members of the German Bishops' Conference are already using the language of the Synod Report to justify major reformulations of the Church's sexual teaching. He called this language condescending to the richly articulate tradition of moral reflection in Catholicism, including the theology of the body developed by Pope St. John Paul II. The Holy Father has added 11 new members to the Vatican office that focuses on the lay apostolate and family life, with two married couples and four figures affiliated with ecclesial movements highlighting the selections. The Dicastery for Laity, Family, and Life oversees most Catholic movements and maintains the International Associations of the Faithful Directory. Pope Francis will visit Verona on the 18th of May, 2024. The occasion for this visit of the northern Italian city will be the 14th Festival of the Social Doctrine of the Church, as well as the 1650th anniversary of the death of St. Zeno of Verona, a local bishop of the 4th century and the city's patron saint. The Holy Father will also visit Montorio Prison to speak with inmates and share a meal with them. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. I'm Matthew Santucci for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano.
She was kidnapped from her bed in her pajamas with other girls. Other girls were murdered and she was taken hostage.
My mother, my sisters, my brothers and their children have been all killed in one instant. That is not easy. 30 lives. These are not statistics. These are people who I lived with. I have memories with every one of them.
Pope Francis met Palestinian and Israeli families in the Vatican, and after listening to their suffering, he expressed his sorrow.
Qui siamo andati oltre le guerre.
Here, we have gone beyond wars. This is not waging war. This is terrorism. Please, let us move forward for peace. Pray for peace. Pray fervently for peace.
Che il Signore metta mano.
Pope Francis's prayer resonates with Father Ibrahim, who is a member of the Franciscan Order of the Friars Minor. They've been working in Jerusalem for over 800 years, preserving and studying the places of Christian heritage. After his meeting with Pope Francis, Father Ibrahim shared about the situation of his brothers and the Christian minority in the Holy Land during these days of terror.
Quando è iniziata la guerra.
When the war started on October 7th, we were at the beginning of the school year, with all Muslim and Christian children reciting the prayer of St. Francis. Oh, make me an instrument of your peace. We saw the missiles arriving and we understood that something extraordinary was happening, something that could not be normal.
Non è normale.
The situation of Christians in the Holy Land has been difficult for centuries and not easy recently. But with the beginning of this aggression and terror, the situation has become even more alarming.
Si parlo dei cristiani di Betlemme.
If I talk about the Christians in Bethlehem, the majority of Christians in the Holy Land are in the Bethlehem area, and they're also going through a very difficult time. Everyone works in the tourism sector, which is now blocked. Everyone is unemployed. After 2 years without work due to the pandemic, and then these days, Bethlehem, which was supposed to be full of tourists and pilgrims, everyone is canceled. There is no one. Bethlehem is without pilgrims. It's dead, a ghost town.
Pellegrini morta. Fantasma. cristiani di Gerusalemme.
The Christians in Jerusalem. Everyone is desperate. I am very concerned about the presence of Christians in the Holy Land, because also for the church, if all of the Christians leave, the holy places become mere museums. Without Christians, they would lose their significance. It's a concern for everyone. The church is worried.
La Chiesa è preoccupata.
But despite the difficult situation, hope has not been lost.
Abbiamo cercato di fare iniziativa.
We tried to organize prayer initiatives, Muslims and Christians. We did it twice, even with the presence of the custodian, the presence of the patriarch, Cardinal Pier Battista, even the children, the drawings they made, the phrases they wrote, all about peace. Everyone wants peace. No one spoke of hatred. No one spoke of revenge. No one spoke of war. Everyone spoke of peace.
Ma tutti hanno parlato di pace.
The faithful in Jerusalem are afraid, but they have not abandoned prayer.
Prima del 7 d'ottobre,
before October 7th, not so many people came to the church, to the Mass. But now really a lot come to Mass, many. People need to pray, and whenever there is a crisis, when there is one, people need to be close to God.
In these dark days, the presence of the faithful in the churches of Jerusalem becomes a symbol of resilience, while the common desire for peace is felt stronger than ever. May prayer continue to be a beacon of hope, illuminating the path towards reconciliation and peaceful coexistence in the Holy Land.
Israeli children are not well. The Israeli people are not well. They have paid a high price. 1,400 people were killed in a single day on October 7th, and many more were injured, with numerous deaths continuing until now. Even they are not living well. The Palestinians are not living well either. They must find a solution. Enough with 70 years of hatred, revenge, blood, and victims. Enough. We need to live in peace.
Basta. Bisogna vivere in pace.
Hillbilly Thomists are eight Dominican priests from the east coast of the United States, the province of St. Joseph, and really we were all in a formation house together in Washington, D.C., and some of them were professional musicians before they entered religious life, so we started playing folk music and bluegrass music together, and eventually in 2017 we recorded a first album to try to make money for the studentate, for priestly formation. And that album went into the Billboard charts, which we were very surprised by. So we started playing more concerts and recording for fun.
On Saturday, November the 25th, four members of the Hillbilly Thomists took the stage for their first international concert, venturing beyond the borders of the United States. Drawing a crowd of more than 600 attendees, the event unfolded in the historical Aula Magna of the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas in Rome, in a captivating blend of beauty and bluegrass.
Father Thomas Joseph, especially the rector of this esteemed institution, tends to find clever ways to insert even some kind of specific points of Thomistic philosophy and theology in his lyrics. So he has one song called The Power and the Glory, where he refers to some of the finer points of Thomistic metaphysics, the real distinction between essence and existence and participation. And he likes to say that we're trying to bring together two venerable traditions, the venerable tradition on the one hand of American bluegrass and folk music, and on the other hand, the venerable tradition of Thomistic philosophy and theology. So.
In addition to the friars' harmonized voices, the eight band members also play a variety of acoustic instruments, like the dobro, dulcimer, banjo, mandolin, harmonica, and steel guitar. What started as a joyful celebration of life has now transformed into something with a greater purpose.
It didn't begin from a sort of desire to, you know, be reaching tons of people or anything. It just sort of, it was because we enjoyed playing music together. It was a way to kind of take a break from study. And but, you know, the more we kind of realized that people liked listening to it, we began to see that it could be a real apostolic opportunity. You know, the order of the Dominican order is the order of preachers. And so we are very aware that a lot of people who are listening to our music, they might be very engaged with their faith, but we hear from people too who are not so engaged with their faith, or who are still kind of searching for the truth, and maybe haven't yet found it in Christ and in His church. So it's a great joy to hear from people who you know listen to our music, and it makes them think about some of these higher things, you know, and hopefully begins to at least give them some hope to cling to, and some, you know, begin to think about, you know, coming to faith. So it is a real, I would say it's a part of our apostolic mission of preaching.
From the day I found out you were telling me lies, I've been living.
Father Peter Gouch describes the band's music not only as a creative way of preaching, but as something deeply Dominican, since it was known that St. Dominic, the founder of the Order of Preachers, loved music and would sing loudly as he was traveling on foot. Their music, the lead singer described, although playful and lighthearted, ultimately aims at setting the minds of their listeners on what's above, on the higher things.
I think the music does disarm people because it shows them another side of the Catholic priesthood, or it suggests another way of thinking about Catholic culture. It introduces religious ideas in a slightly more playful or somewhat musically serious but poetic way. And I think it provides Catholic families with something to listen to that all the family can enjoy, that is kind of appreciable at every level. We have a lot of homeschool parents who like the music, a lot of children who like the music. But we also find it does open doors to conversation with non-Christians. We have a pretty big fan base of people who write us who kind of discover the Catholic Church in a new way through listening to the band.
So we put a little gasoline.
I think it's part of our human nature to love beautiful things and to desire to sort of have our intellects delight in beautiful things. And so if our music can be an occasion for that for people, then that's a great joy for us.
I didn't know what to expect either, but it was amazing. They were great. I also just loved like the references. Like, I don't know, they were great songs, but we got the whole existence, and that's what we're learning in philosophy. So it was great to like have a great songs, but we could actually like follow them and understand them.
Was it your first bluegrass concert?
I have to say it was, and I hope it's not my last.
Where all is joy and is peace and love in the soul of the dead.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano.
Here in one of the many laboratories of the Vatican Museums. And it's quite incredible how many works of art from different centuries and different continents are being brought here to be maintained and preserved for generations to come.
We are in the Marble Restoration Laboratory, and this is actually one of the first restoration projects that the patrons themselves began over a little over 40 years ago. The many statues that are here, the many pieces of marble, come from very, very many periods of history. We can see pieces from pre-Christian, early Christian years, and then pieces that come from other parts of the world.
For the patrons, how do people actually choose which work of art they want to support, they want to adopt?
So when a patron decides that they want to adopt a project, we give them what we call a wish book, and they're able to look through it and pick out something that they're interested in. This is done by a chapter or an individual patron.
So you bring them down here, are they able to see what they're adopting?
That's one of the greatest benefits of being a patron, is that you're able to come down and visit the various laboratories that are here within the museums.
On a sample itinerary, after a visit to the marble section, a patron's second stop would be the painting and wood restoration lab. Here, there's a particular emphasis on collaboration between restorers, curators, and the scientific department to determine proper diagnosis and treatment. In the analysis stage, they take a variety of ultraviolet, infrared, and X-ray scans to search for ongoing degradation or missing sections. Once all possible information is considered, the restorer can proceed according to instruction. In the textile lab, restorers repair rare articles belonging to key church figures. This saddle skirt was once for the horse of Pope Clement XIV, who was Roman pontiff from 1769 to 1774. He can be seen on that very saddle in an iconic painting of him riding above Lake Albano near the Apostolic Palace of Castel Gandolfo. This medieval tunic belongs to the treasury of St. John Lateran at the Holy Stairs, which holds some of the most sacred relics of Christianity. It was previously dated to the 6th to the 8th century, but carbon-14 dating now reveals that it also contains materials from the late 1st century AD. This finding, along with its age-old presence in the Sacra Sanctorum, means that it could have belonged to an early church father or apostle, such as St. John the Evangelist.
The fact that they dedicate their life to restoring this work for the world is, it's very inspiring.
We've met the restorers on several projects, and they get so excited that we're excited about the work that they're doing.
In a part of the tapestry laboratory known as the Sala di Tinture, these two are preparing to dye wool threads to match existing ones for a tapestry that was made by the school of Raphael. In their work, they first consult a recipe book of 1,781 colors and tints to determine the best match. Next, they mix the dyes and add water to a cylinder. Then they add plain threads. Once the cylinder is prepped, the restorer places it in a machine that mixes it together. This one can hold up to 8 cylinders for any given cycle. Afterwards, the threads are removed and left to dry. They make the final stage of their journey through the hands of the restorers by weaving their way into a tapestry.
To see the tiniest of details that they were working on was inspiring to me. This is, honestly, I think it's God's talent through their hands. I really do.
Next week on Vaticano, we continue with the fourth of five installments as we delve deeper into the connection between art and faith and see larger works being restored inside the Vatican Museums.